This is ESPN 103.7 Lafayette and 104.1 Lake Charles, Southwest Louisiana's sports station.
That's right. Can you dig it?
It's time for 2 hours of the best sports talk on the airwaves.
Can you dig it?
The Jordy Holtberg Show with your host, the Blonde Bomber himself.
Can you dig it?
Jordy Holtberg.
Hey, good afternoon and welcome. My goodness gracious. Just take a look outside. Wherever you are, just look. Soak it all in. It is an absolute chamber of commerce day. Oh, big weekend on tap for LSU sports. LSU baseball has a road series against the fourth-ranked Tennessee Volunteers. The sixth-ranked softball team has a home series against Auburn. The football team concludes its spring with the annual spring game. Matt McMahon making some waves in recruiting. Kentucky's found that guy, and the Pels, two games to go, one game lead over the Phoenix Suns for the sixth and final playoff spot. Ooh, it's a busy day. Today, Friday, April 12th, the year 2024. Can I say it again? Friday. Yes, indeed. My main man, James Mesh, has made his way back. And he is in the producer's chair, and I'm thrilled. He's on the campus of Delta Media. He's in the EBCO Development Studios, where you'll find ESPN 103.7 Lafayette. Head west, ESPN 104.1 in Lake Charles, streaming all over the world thanks to our free mobile app, ESPN SouthwestLouisiana.com. Mike's Marine Hotline, 337-706-0111. Mike's Marine, keeping you on the water. The Masters is concluding round one. Round two is underway after the weather delays. Bryson DeChambeau had the first round lead, but now there's a four-way tie for first early on here in round two. Bryson DeChambeau, Nikolai Højgaard, Max Homa, and Scottie Scheffler are all at six under par. Tiger Woods trying to make a 24th straight cut at Augusta. And right now, Tiger is at plus one, shot an opening round 73, had to finish it early this morning. And now he has played through 12 holes, and he is at plus one. So certainly within the cut line as we speak, but got some work to do. So we'll keep you updated on all of that. LSU baseball. Oh, yeah, they got a big one tonight. After their 16-zip run rule win over McNeese, out of the top 25 for the first time in quite some time, and they're changing up their pitching rotation, sending Gage Jump to the mound for game one instead of Luke Holman. It's likely because what Tennessee is doing. AJ Causey has been their Friday starter the last few weeks, but was hit hard in his last start Friday against Auburn. So their best guy recently has been Drew Beam, who they will throw on Saturday. So whatever, Gage Jump will pitch today with a 6:30 start. Luke Holman will pitch Saturday with a 4:30 our time start. Sunday has the proverbial TBA. LSU leads the all-time series with Tennessee, 62 up, 29 down. They've won 18 of their last 26 games. LSU doesn't like Tennessee. Tennessee doesn't like LSU and their coach, but Tennessee's a really, really good ball club. Spring football game tomorrow. Brian Kelly described this year's team better balanced offensively and defensively than last year. He says it's been a healthy spring with no injuries so far. He says he doesn't see any position besides defensive tackle that they'll need to target in the transfer portal, and they'll target one or two or three. He did mention that tight end Mason Taylor is a player they will count on much more than they did last year, that Taylor will be a central figure in what they do and that the tight ends would be featured quite regularly. If you go into the spring game, it'll be much like last year when they pitted the offense against the defense instead of having two separate teams. And they'll use that crazy scoring thing that they've always done. I can't begin to explain how they do it, but it is what it is. Couple players to look for, an important role, backup quarterback. Is it going to be Ricky Collins? Is it going to be AJ Swan? We'll see. So there you go. On the basketball front, oh, Matt McMahon, love to see it. Picked up another commitment yesterday from UT Martin transfer point guard Jordan Sears. Sears was one of the nation's top scorers this past season, averaging nearly 22 points, 5 rebounds, 5 assists, and 2 steals per game while shooting 43% from downtown. So Sears is the second player McMahon has landed from the portal, along with former Louisiana native, former K-State shooting guard Cam Carter. He's also got commitments from a trio of 4-star players from the high school ranks in guards Curtis Givens, Victorious Miller, and forward Robert Miller. Those guys give LSU a 2024 recruiting class that's currently ranked 13th in the nation. And that's a massive improvement from last year's 45th ranked class. Oh, boy, last night the New Orleans Pelicans jumped out to a quick, huge lead over Sacramento. Saw it dwindle and dwindle and dwindle. And then in the third period, Zion scored 17 of his 31, and the Pels went on to beat Sacramento 135-123 at the Golden 1 Center. Thursday night moved one step closer to clinching a playoff spot. Not a play-in spot, but a playoff spot. The Pels are 48-32. They remain in sole possession of 6th place with last night's win. They are one game ahead of the 7th place Phoenix Suns with 2 games to go tonight. At Golden State, they're 15 games tonight. Every team plays tonight. Nobody plays on Saturday. And then there's 15 games on Sunday to wrap up the regular season. The Pels need to maintain a one-game lead over the Suns to get to the Western Conference number 6 seed because the Suns own the head-to-head tiebreaker. So the Suns, if you look at the schedule tonight, the Suns are playing at Sacramento. Come on, Kings. And then on Sunday, the Suns are at Minnesota. Ooh, it's a hype. If I'm betting, I'm betting they go 0-2. I'm betting they go 0-2. You don't have to worry about Sacramento. You got them beat 2 games up on them with 2 games ago, and you're beating them 5 straight. You played them 5 times this year, 5-0 against Sacramento. That's pretty good. Pretty good. So Zion had some help throughout the course of the game. They had that 23-point lead less than 10 minutes into the game. And it was crazy. They were making everything, defending everything. And, you know, basketball is a game of runs. And certainly Sacramento made their run. C.J. McCollum finished with 31. Trey Murphy added 27. The Pels improved to 27-14 on the road this season, thanks in a large part to knocking down 22 of 40 three-point attempts. That 27 wins on the road, a franchise record for road wins. So let me tell you our guest list today coming up. Christian Clark will join us from San Francisco. Talk about last night. Let's talk about tonight. All these games matter. They all matter. Larry Holder will join us after that. We'll talk about 13 days away from the NFL draft. Is anybody with the Saints fired up? Any Saints fan fired up about this draft? I don't know. Hour number 2, Bill Franquez will join us live from Knoxville to preview the big series with LSU and Tennessee. And then the regular crowd shuffles in on a Friday. Fridays with Faust, George Faust, and then George Becknell, James Mesh, and I will We'll make some picks along the way. Speaking of James Mesh, he's back in the EVCO Development Studios. Good afternoon, James. Friday, you know, when you go on remote and I get in here on Zoom, I don't hear a thing that anybody's talking about, so I have no earthly clue And y'all have been doing this for several days now, whether it's service Chevrolet or walk-ons. Y'all have been the traveling vagabonds. So surprise me. What is our Friday food poll question of the day?
Well, this one was inspired because my birthday was yesterday, and we had had a whole discussion about
Okay. We had the day off yesterday.
Yeah.
So I will say a happy belated happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, James Mesh. Happy birthday to you. And many more.
Thank you, Jordy.
You're welcome.
We had a whole discussion because I decided to go get sushi as a birthday dinner with my family.
Love it.
Ray did not take too kind of that. He was upset that I decided to go with sushi instead of just about anything else. So we made it our poll question. What do you choose to eat for your birthday dinner? The options were sushi, steak, crawfish, or is it something else? And right now, leading heavily at about 57% of the votes, or 56%, they're going with steak.
You know what I did for my birthday dinner?
What did you do?
I had my daughters with me. We went to a sushi place, but we got the hibachi. You know, the guy standing up and chopping things up and doing all that. I mean, so much fun. So much fun. You ever done that?
Oh, yeah, I've done it. I've done it quite a few times.
I love it. I love it. I caught the shrimp on the first toss in my mouth. Yes. It was fantastic. Loved it. Loved it. All right. Vote on X. Vote on Facebook and do all that kind of stuff. By the way, Kentucky has hired BYU's Mark Pope to replace John Calipari. Pope won a national title as a player at Kentucky. He's never won an NCAA tournament game as a coach. Good luck to the Wildcats. And how about this? We were off yesterday, but it was the worst start ever for a pitcher. Astros starter Hunter Brown became the first Major League Baseball pitcher to ever allow 11 hits in less than a full inning of work. Here's his final stat line in a 13-3 loss to the Royals. Two-thirds innings pitched, gave up 11 hits, 9 runs, 1 walk, no strikeouts on 40 pitches. I don't think I've ever seen anything like that in my life. I'm sure that Hunter Brown is like, oh, please, please get me out of here. Why won't you pull me? Why do you make me keep throwing? They should have pulled him after 10 pitches. But anyway, wow, what a day. And what a day we have lined up for you and yours. So sit back and relax when we come back. The Pels, 2 games left in the regular season. Can they hold on? Can they hold on for dear life? Christian Clark joins us next.
You're listening to ESPN 1037 Lafayette and 1041 Lake Charles, Southwest Louisiana's sports station. Your home for the Houston Astros.
All right, we start off on this Friday on the hardwood, thanks to the Pels getting a much-needed win last night over the Sacramento Kings. Boy, do they have their number 5-0 this season. 5-0, the 4 regular season games, the play-in tournament, thanks in part to knocking down 22 of 40 from downtown to improve to 27-14 on the road. 27-14, that's a franchise record. He's been there for all of those 27 wins, and he joins us from the great land of Golden State, San Francisco, California, Mr. Christian Clark, with just one regular season road game left before he can fly on home. Christian, NOLA.com, thank you for the time, big guy. How are you?
Hey man, I'm doing good. I think like one of the many strange things about this Pelican season is several more road wins than home wins. I mean, they've just been a better road team than a home team this year.
Yeah, I'm telling you. Trey Murphy was terrific. His three-pointers, and he seems to be shooting them deeper and deeper, and it got a little bit contagious there. I don't think I've seen a better start to a game. And then, of course, the Pels, as they always do, Christian. They make us bite our fingernails because they let teams chip away and get back in it. But how would you sum up that win last night?
Yeah, I mean, I think the Pelicans are, like, the Kings is a very favorable matchup for them. I mean, obviously evidenced by the fact that they're 5-0 against them. But that said, like, the Kings are a solid team, and you know, it's just hard to beat anybody, especially a solid team, five times in a row. It's very difficult. I don't care if you have some matchups, and I'm looking at the Zion one in particular. I just think it was really impressive for them to, you know, get another win on this road trip. They're 3-0 on this road trip now. They needed to shoot the ball really well in order to pull out this win, and they did. It was great to see Trey Murphy have a really good game. He's kind of coming on for the Pelicans lately. I think he had, you know, not the greatest homestand in the world when he stepped in the starting lineup for Brandon Ingram. And CJ, too, nine threes. All of a sudden, he's right there, spitting distance of Peja Stojakovic's single-season record for threes.
Oof, amazing. So tonight, it's Golden State. All of a sudden, when you look at the standings, Pels are in sixth, a game ahead of the Suns. And then it's a jam, log jam, for 8, 9, and 10 with Sacramento, Golden State, and the Lakers all at 45 and 35. So jockeying there. The 10 teams are set. Now it's just a position of who's going to be in what seed and so forth and so on. So here I am thinking that maybe Golden State would rest somebody and do all that. I don't think that's going to be the case, is it?
No, because the three teams in California, Kings, Lakers, Warriors, they all have identical records. I mean, it's a knife fight for them. I mean, there's a huge advantage in being a part of that 7-8 play-in game as opposed to the 9-10 play-in game, as the Pelicans saw last year. Because if you're in the 9-10 play-in game, I mean, you're going to have to win two games in order to reach the playoffs. You're in the 7-8 play-in game, you can lose the first one, and, you know, your season isn't over. I mean, I think one of the important things that happened last night, look, the playoffs is obviously the goal for the Pelicans, and it'll be disappointing if they don't finish sixth or higher, but they did guarantee themselves finishing no lower than seventh place last night, which will mean, you know, if they make the play-in tournament, home game at Smoothie King Center, if they lose that one, another home game. So, you know, potentially two chances at home to reach the playoffs if they are part of the play-in tournament, but we know what they want to do. They want to make the playoffs.
That's right. And there's only one team to look at the rest of the way, and that's Phoenix. And there's 15 games tonight. Phoenix is at Sacramento. There are 15 games on Sunday. Phoenix is at Minnesota. So when you look at the weighing the schedule as it is, Phoenix with two road games at Sacramento, at Minnesota, the Pels, one road, one home, at Golden State, and at the Lakers. Golden State and the Lakers, they're good enough where if they survive and get into a seven-game series, wow, they're dangerous. So which schedule do you feel is more difficult, Phoenix's or New Orleans's?
Probably Phoenix's. But I guess I need to see how this slate of games tonight goes, because my question is, do we know if Minnesota is going to be playing for anything on Sunday? That's one of the questions I have. I mean, I assume so. It's so close up there at the top. But I would need to see that first. I will say that Phoenix has played Minnesota really, really well this year. Phoenix is kind of one of the teams that has had the Timberwolves' number. I don't think this is going to be easy for the Pelicans. You're 1-1. It's possible that's not even good enough. I mean, they need to win out to guarantee themselves getting into the top six. I mean, hopefully the Kings can bounce back, but you'd think that the Suns would be incredibly motivated to win this game, but they have been, like the Pelicans, kind of one of the other confounding teams of the NBA that can be hard to predict at times.
So inconsistent at times, can look so good in one moment and so bad in another. If you had to pick an MVP for this team right now, I mean, Ingram's missed time. Zion's been playing great. Herb Jones has got his three-point shooting up astronomically from what it's been in his career. Who would you put it on?
I did this like at the midpoint of the season, and at that time I chose Brandon Ingram. And if you ask me today, I think I would go with Zion Williamson just because of how well he has played post in-season tournament. It was not a very good start to the season for Zion. I think he's been pretty honest that he has said a couple times on the record here, I was not in fantastic shape at the start of the season. He said last night, I told CJ, like, I'm not where I need to be. I need you to kind of carry the load for us early in the season. CJ has been phenomenal. So, look, it was not great from Zion early in the season, but he's been, you know, so good here for 2 or 3 months. I kind of have to look at him, and let's knock on wood, availability too, man. I mean, that's the biggest thing that's happened this year. Zion has been playing, and it has been so great to see.
He looks in great shape. He looks like the player everybody thought he should be. I mean, he's doing on both ends of the court. He's running. He's active. He's involved. He's very unselfish. And he's knocking down some mid-range jumpers. I mean, he's living up to the billing now. No question about it.
Yeah, you're exactly right. This is the guy that I think a lot of the Pelicans fan base thought they were getting when the Pelicans won the number one draft slot in 2019. Zion is a guy right now making a positive impact on both ends of the floor. Defensively, he has made enormous strides over the past few months. You know, I think a huge negative on that end for most of his NBA career. I think he's kind of been a positive over the last few weeks or so. If you just look at his steals and blocks numbers month by month, by far his highest steals and blocks totals in the month of March. You know, last night I think he got 3 steals, 1 block that has kind of carried over into April. One of the biggest indicators whether Zion is in good physical condition and engaged is the steals and blocks numbers to me, because that was something he did at an incredibly high level at Duke. We have not always seen it in the NBA, but we are seeing it lately. I mean, this guy at his best is a two-way force.
I'm with you. Tonight, Golden State, you try to contain Steph Curry as much as you can. He's going to get his. Klay Thompson back in the starting lineup. Draymond Green always seems to cause problems. You can't let him get in your head when you play against him. Just go defend him and do what he does, and don't let him psych you out. Who do you put Herb on tonight?
Oh, man. I mean, probably Steph. I mean, let Herb and Dyson –
split that
and take the Steph assignment and chase him around a bunch of screens and try not to foul him on threes. God, it would not be a fun task to have to chase that guy around screens and over screens and things like that. But that would be my guess. Yeah, they're playing really well. I mean, they won 9 of 10.
Maybe Jose. Maybe, you know, just somebody quick just to stay in front of him and Take your chances on that one and go from there. When the Pels have had success against Golden State, what have they done well?
Oh, man, that's a great question. I mean, I remember that game early in the season, and when they kicked the crap out of Golden State on their home floor and Golden State got booed by their own crowd, that was like an offensive game for the Pelicans. That was a game where Trey Murphy got going, Jordan Hawkins got going, and they kind of overwhelmed Golden State with their three-point shooting. I just think like the Pelicans have a more talented roster than the Warriors 1 through 10 this year. I think one of the things to watch for the Pelicans right now, like, do they have enough scoring off the bench in some of these games now that Trey Murphy has moved into the starting lineup? You know, like Jose having a game like he did last night hitting 43s and having a game like he did in Phoenix makes a huge difference, because with Trey in the starting lineup, you're not left with many guys who could score the ball off the bench. That's something else I'm definitely keeping an eye on.
All right, man. You got the red eye getting out there tonight, or are you going to take it easy and fly back normal tomorrow?
Yeah, I'll just get back normal. I'm all good on that front, man. And one thing I'm excited for is I don't have to go anywhere for the play-in tournament this year, because 2 years ago, I had to, you know, drop of a hat, fly to L.A. for that Clippers game, which was a very fun game, and then flew immediately to Phoenix, and I was gone for 6 days, and I didn't have enough clothes. So I'm hoping I can just kind of plan out the postseason, whatever it may be this year.
Let's get to number six. Let's hold it, and then let's wait and see. If it finished out the way it is right now, if the regular season was over right now and the Pels were at number six, who would they play in the first round?
Like today or Sunday?
Yeah, in other words, let's just say the regular season ended at 80 games and the Pels were six, Suns were seventh, and let's say the Kings, Golden State and L.A. are knocked out of it. So Phoenix and Sacramento make the playoffs. Those are your eight. So the Pels would play the three seed, Oklahoma City?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's kind of the matchup I'm rooting for, honestly. I think the Pelicans have had some trouble with them in the regular season, but I could see them beating OKC. I think Minnesota would be a tougher matchup. You know, I think teams that give Zion trouble are teams with a lot of size on the interior. Minnesota definitely fits that profile. I mean, let's assume Karl Anthony Towns is back. We can put Towns on Zion and just have Gobert hang out in the paint. I think that would be tough for the Pelicans. You know, Oklahoma City's a lot different, where they're going to start four guards and wings around Chet Holmgren. They're a smaller team. I think, you know, Zion, I like that matchup a little bit more for him. And I think if it is Oklahoma City, like, the number one thing I would watch for is, does Willie Green use Jonas Valanciunas a lot and try to beat Oklahoma City up in the rebounding department and post Chet up from time to time? Or, like you showed in that last game against the Thunder, does he try to go small against the Thunder, which is really, you know, their strength, I guess, kind of playing more towards their strength? You know, a lot of Larry, some Jeremiah Robinson, Earl. I know which one I would do, but, like, that's like one of the number one things I would watch for if it is indeed Oklahoma City.
This may be crazy, but I'd figure out a way to have Ingram, Murphy, Jones, Zion, and McCollum. I'd go real small, but how are they going to defend those shooters? I know you have to give up something on the other end, but, man, I'd spread them out. We'll see. Lots of things to tinker with, but we shall see. But tonight it's all important against the Golden State Warriors. Man, what a win it would be if they could get to 28 on the road. Christian, thank you so much for your time. Have a great time in that beautiful – I'm used to the old arena in Oakland. I've never been to the Chase Center in San Fran, so I would love to see it, but I bet it's beautiful.
Yeah, I got to do a couple of games in San Francisco last year, and I just love visiting, man. I'm a basic you-know-what. I just like to go to Blue Bottle and get my latte and get my chocolate croissant.
There you go. Safe travels, my friend. Let's get a dub tonight, and we'll talk to you when playoff times roll around. Christian Clark, NOLA.com, thank you. And we'll take a quick time out here. We'll come back. Larry Holder, as we shift to the Saints, the NFL. Is anybody excited about this draft in this part of the world? We'll find out next.
You're listening to ESPN 103.7 Lafayette and 104.1 Lake Charles. Your home for the best local sports talk in Southwest Louisiana.
All right, Fridays means Larry Holder of The Athletic as we talk Saints NFL draft. It's 13 days away, if I am correct, in Detroit City. Yes, indeed. Larry, good afternoon. Boy, what a Chamber of Commerce day this is, buddy. How are you?
I'm good. You're right. It's almost like you shouldn't be watching the Masters. You should be, like, out on the golf course, or for me, you know me, out there playing a little tennis in some perfect weather.
Oh my gosh! I had a birthday just the other day, and one of my presents was, you're going to laugh at me, but it was a pickleball set of rackets and balls. So my knees won't let me play tennis anymore. So it used to be pretty good, but now I'm going to try and do the pickleball thing and see what happens with that one. How about them apples?
You know, I've never played pickleball, but
I haven't either.
There are definitely more courts popping up, taking over tennis courts in some places. And I just assume I'd probably be pretty good pretty quickly. I feel like you. It's certainly a different, same techniques in some things, but differences. Other aspects.
Yeah, you'll fall into the fray as you get older. You'll see. Don't give up on it yet. All right, tell me the Saints pick up a wide receiver. Great name. Equanimeous St. Brown. Who the heck is he?
Well, he's Amon-Ra St. Brown's brother. So does that help any?
Yeah, okay. I guess.
Not the same caliber of player.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, exactly. So they, at least they, they're blood. So maybe some of that can trickle over into the Saints. But yeah, I mean, look, when you look at their depth chart at wide receiver, it's pretty scarce in terms of guys that really scare you and really can take over a game. You know, I'm not saying St. Brown is a type who can do that, but he's certainly someone who's had experience. Someone who could make a roster, but I mean, he's a guy who's got to make a roster. There's no number one receiver, in my opinion, on the Saints roster. And I'm including Chris Olave. I mean, I just don't see him as a number one guy. Reminds me of when the Saints drafted Brandon Cooks. He had both of them kind of had the makings of maybe being one, but. Brandon has always kind of been a 1A, 2 guy. And Chris Olave maybe has the makings of that. But, after a couple of years, I mean, it doesn't seem like he could be that number one guy unless something drastically changes this year. And so you have him and Rashid Shaheed, and then who else? I mean, it's kind of rare for the Saints team to be in a position where you're wondering, man, what's going to happen at wide receiver? I mean, the Saints kind of got spoiled for a long time with having Michael Thomas and then some other veterans to complement them and some youngsters. So, this is a little bit of a different deal. And, Jordy goes into the draft. It's like, well, what do you do? I mean, do you try to go get one in the draft, and where do you do it? And at least for this draft, a wide receiver depth should be pretty good. So, if the Saints elect not to go there in round one, they probably could find a good one in maybe day two.
I want to talk to his parents because they come up with some names. Amon-Ra, and Equanimeous. So there you go. And slipping under the radar, the old, I think he was a Mississippi State quarterback, right? Kellen Mond signed a 1-year contract. That's just an arm for training camp down the road?
Texas A&M. That's where he was.
Texas A&M. That's it.
Yeah. SEC, same color scheme.
but
Texas A&M, and I think he was either a second or third round pick a few years ago, and he's really bounced around. So, yeah, he's someone that's going to come in. He's probably going to come in and compete for the backup job. I mean, it's not like Nathan Peterman has this dazzling resume. I mean, he does not. So, you have him, Jake Haener, Kellen Mond. I think you just throw them all in there and say, all right, battle for the backup spot. And also, just even talking about the backup spot, with Jameis Winston now in Cleveland, there's probably not going to be any kind of conversation of, man, should the backup be playing instead of Carr? Like, that, at least in that sense, you have definite backups, and they're not starting caliber quarterbacks. So on one side, it's probably a good thing. On another side, though, if Derek Carr gets hurt, I mean, can you trust any of these guys? I don't know. So, and people are probably saying, well, Larry, I don't even know if I can trust Derek Carr. So you at least have that question.
All right, I got you. Let's see. So who makes this team? I don't. St. Brown, the third receiver the Saints have signed this offseason after they released Michael Thomas. Cedric Wilson from Miami. Stanley Morgan for Cincinnati. I always say if they're worth a grain of salt, the team that they're with is going to do everything in their power to keep them. So who's the best of those three?
As a receiver, I would certainly say Cedric Wilson. He went into a situation where he kind of got minimized. He actually signed a decent deal a few years ago to go to Miami and kind of got minimized. So, I think that's and Stanley Morgan, he's someone, local kid, but someone you could maybe say, all right, he's a special teams type of guy too. Could play on special teams units. It's a question of, all right, who's your number three guy, and it's a wild question of who's your number one guy. I mean, the fact that you have question marks in kind of slotting where these receivers go, I think it's certainly something that will probably be circled going into training camp, something we've got to watch just because there's no sure thing. I mean, you like Olave and you like Rashid Shaheed, but any of these other veteran guys, you're basically seeing if they can make a roster and if they deserve playing time. And so, yeah, it's definitely, it's a little different, like I said, of years in the past when you've kind of had when they were good, you were kind of used to who they were having. But right now, you just kind of outside of 1A and 2, I mean, you're kind of throwing the rest up in the air and seeing where they fall.
So many things have to happen. I think everybody in the world thinks the Saints are going to take an offensive lineman with their first pick. They've got to get a defensive lineman, maybe wide receiver. They need lots of help. But from what you've seen in this offseason to date with free agency and signing certain players and retaining certain players, letting certain players go, let's say the Saints have a good draft, and they get maybe three starters out of this deal. I don't know if that's even feasible or not, but let's say they get three starters. Is that enough to make hay in this division with what Atlanta's done and, you know, couldn't beat Tampa Bay a year ago? I mean, what do you think of the Saints?
Well, if you could get three starters out of this draft, I do think that would help you because that means they're better than what you have. And so I think that would then it would be upgrades of spots. And so I guess it depends on the position. Like if you find a starter at like strong safety, I mean, is that going to be a big, or free safety? Because Tyrann Mathieu, you know, he's kind of the hybrid. He plays wherever. But to someone to replace Marcus May, I mean, is that like a game breaker? I don't know. It'd have to be the caliber of someone like Marcus Williams or like, or like Malcolm Jenkins, a bunch of years ago. But I think if you could find a starter, say, at tackle, I mean, if you could find a starter wide receiver and you find a starter, elsewhere, like I said, I think that would be – that means – because it's not like the Saints they're not – you could argue maybe tackle, like offensive line, you have nobody. Like, you don't feel good about – either one of them, and it's injury for Ramczyk because when he's healthy, he's very good. But right. There's question marks with him. Left tackle is a totally open spot. But if you're finding starters that can play at all these spots, I do think it would push you in the mix because I think it would help all over the map. Like it would help you in all phases. Well, at least offense and defense. So I do think that if they could do that, I mean, I think you'd have to be more than happy. With the Saints draft. But, I mean, that's asking a lot. The last time that happened was probably 2017, to get three starters. You got even more than that. But still, yeah, I think that is asking a lot. But that's where the Saints are. I mean, they're just kind of
stagnant
with what they can do, and they need to be able to strike with this cheap, good talent.
Yes, they've got to do it. It's critical. All right, so who's the better quarterback? Is it Caleb Williams? Is it Jaden Daniels? Who do you like more?
Oh, boy. It's I feel like I'm going to say Caleb Williams, but I feel like that could be wrong. I feel like I've seen growth from Jaden Daniels, like so much growth that he could be the guy out of this draft. But it's you see Caleb Williams, and you wonder, if he can live up to the hype. But can Jaden Daniels kind of sustain and improve in the NFL? And if you kind of go by kind of the momentum, media driven, a lot of it. But you feel like that Daniels is probably taking a little bit of a step past Drake May. So I mean that's but I do think though that. It's got to be the situations. You look at where these guys are going to go. Like Caleb Williams is going to go to the Bears. I mean, are they in a position to make him successful? Probably more so than Justin Fields and other quarterbacks who have come in. I mean, look, they've got DJ Moore and Keenan Allen. I mean, that's pretty legit.
it is.
You got to like that. And so, and where's Jaden Daniels going to be going? To Washington? Maybe that offense, you know, I feel like they've got some pieces that he could be successful early. But if he goes to New England, it's probably more of a struggle because they don't have the pieces that you'd want to be successful.
They don't.
And so yeah, I think it's going to really depend. You know where Caleb's going, but Jaden, I think it's the situation could certainly dictate how successful he can be right away, and then because he'll be there for at least 5 years. I mean, unless he totally bombs out and you become Justin Fields / Kenny Pickett / Zach Wilson / Mac Jones. You know, I could go on and on about quarterbacks who didn't finish their rookie deals.
He's Larry Holder of The Athletic. Go back and watch the Masters. Tiger's at +2 now. Is he going to make his 24th straight cut at Augusta? Stay tuned. Larry, thank you.
You got it, Jordy. Take care, buddy.
You're the best. Larry Holder of The Athletic. Back to update the Masters leaderboard to set the stage for hour number two next.
Go sign up for our rewards club at ESPNSouthwestLouisiana.com. So you can score tickets, gift certificates, and much more. This is ESPN 1037 Lafayette and 1041 Lake Charles, Southwest Louisiana's sports station.
All right, back wrapping up hour number one. Bryson DeChambeau, Scottie Scheffler at the top of the Masters leaderboard at 7-under. Max Homa is at 6-under. Danny Willett is at 5-under. Tiger Woods trying to make a record-breaking 24th straight cut at Augusta is at +2. He's played 14 holes here in the second round. He was 1 over in the first round. He's 1 over today. So we shall see. Can he close out strong and go from there? I certainly hope so. So stay tuned for updates throughout the course of this. James Mesh, let's get our poll question out there again as far as birthday dinner specialty. What do we have?
Right now, still leading at 55% of the votes is steak. The next closest is crawfish at 18%. 14% have said sushi, and the last 12% have said other. We did get quite a few comments so far. Tina, friend of the program, she said Cajun Po' Boy sushi roll. Tana said, crawfish isn't in season on my birthday, which is in January, but I also go with Italian or French cuisine for my birthday. Tough, the last two have been home-cooked meals by my beautiful fiance. Shout out to her for agreeing to marry me this summer.
Congratulations, young man. Congratulations. So, hey, it's, you know, it's not like I do the same thing every birthday. I don't. Sometimes I do crawfish. Sometimes I do the old surf and turf, a little bone-in filet with a lobster. I'll do that. This, like I said earlier, I did hibachi just the other day. So I'm kind of, but my favorite, but my go-to all the time, I don't do a birthday cake. I'm not a big cake guy, but I love lemon squares. That is my best. And so my kids make me lemon squares and they're terrific at it. And I love every bite of it. That's why I have to swim every day and run every day to keep LBs off. But anyway, all right. Hour number one's in the books. When we return, Bill Franquez live from Knoxville for the LSU Tennessee baseball series. Fridays with Faust, George and James. We'll talk about stuff all coming your way. Hour number two, the Jordy Helfrich Show. ESPN 1037 Lafayette. ESPN 104.1 Lake Charles, your home for the LSU Tigers and the Houston Astros.
This is ESPN 103.7 Lafayette and 104.1 Lake Charles, Southwest Louisiana's sports station.
That's right. Can you dig it?
It's time for 2 hours of the best sports talk on the airwaves.
Can you dig it?
The Jordy Holtberg Show with your host, the Blonde Bomber himself.
Can you dig it?
Jordy Holtberg.
Hour number two of two, and away we go with Bryson DeChambeau and, oh, goodness gracious, Scottie Scheffler atop the leaderboard of the Masters. We've got spring football tomorrow. Matt McMahon gets a big-time transfer portal commitment, and LSU baseball on the horizon as they take on the fourth-ranked Tennessee Volunteers. All this coming your way. This afternoon, hour number two, James Mesh back in the EVCO Development Studios on the campus of Delta Media, where you'll find ESPN 103.7 Lafayette. Head west. We're on ESPN 104.1 in Lake Charles, streaming all over the world thanks to our free mobile app, ESPN SouthwestLouisiana.com. All right. Baseball. LSU looking to get off the schneid after suffering their fourth consecutive SEC series loss and getting run ruled for the third time in a series finale. They bounce back with a run rule 16-zip win over McNeese, and now they are in Knoxville. And as per the tradition, unlike any other on this show, anytime the Tigers are on the road, on Fridays we get Bill Franquez, the longtime sports information director in charge of LSU baseball, the voice of Alec Box Stadium. And when he's on the road, he is the voice of LSU Tiger baseball on the LSU Sports Radio Network. And you'll listen to our games here on our stations. Bill, good afternoon from Knoxville. As always, how's the weather in old Rocky Top?
Old Rocky Top weather, but I tell you what, it was really stormy here yesterday. It got a lot of rain throughout the day. We arrived here early afternoon, and it was raining off and on all the way into the evening. Now, today, it's cleared up, and we're not expecting any rain for the rest of the weekend. It looks really promising. Now, it is a little chilly. I'll say that. It'll be a little chilly tonight. Game time temp will probably be in the mid-50s, but it won't shouldn't get any lower than the low 50s by the time the game's over. So it'll be cool, but not not anything outrageous. But the weather looks good. It's kind of partly cloudy right now. The sun's actually out now, and I think we're getting for a good weekend. It's getting a little warmer as the weekend progresses as well. So that'll be a nice change, okay, also for the series.
All right. So, take me inside the locker room. LSU is shaking up the pitching rotation. Instead of Luke Holman tonight on Friday, Gage Jump gets the jump start. Pardon me. For this first of three games, what's the reasoning behind that in your best opinion?
There are a couple of reasons, Jordy. I think one is that Jay feels like giving Luke Holman an extra day of rest. You know, he hasn't pitched since he pitched in game one of the Vanderbilt series, which was last Thursday. So he feels like even giving him that second day of rest beyond what he normally has may even make him more effective tomorrow when he'll be taking on Tennessee's best pitcher in Drew Beam. So that was one. Another is LSU feels like with Gage Jump on the mound, they're hoping they can get at least five innings out of him. And then at that point, you're likely to see Griffin Herring behind Jump. And they feel like that's a pretty good combination, a good matchup against this Tennessee team. Now, we also could see behind Jump, hopefully LSU's in a situation where the Tigers are in a position that Herring is not needed to pitch as long as he did last week against Vanderbilt, and basically he was used up in one night. So you may see some different relievers that you haven't seen a whole lot of tonight and throughout the weekend, namely Cam Johnson, the freshman left-hander, who, of course, was a huge professional prospect. He appears to be getting better with each outing, so you may see him get an opportunity. And also Aiden Moffitt, who was a redshirt freshman, pitched in one game last year, but essentially was redshirted. And he, like Cam Johnson, has also seemed to be making strides in the midweek non-conference games. But both these kids have tremendous arms. I mean, we're talking, you know, Cam Johnson from the left side at 95, Aiden Moffitt from the right side, 98 to 99. So I think that the thought is, let's start Jump. And if we need to, we'll go to Herring, who's been our best reliever. But also, we might give these younger guys an opportunity as well, if the game dictates that it's necessary. So, yeah, there's quite a bit of thought that's going into this, as the Tigers are trying to shake it up a little bit. And as we saw, Jay shook it up with the lineup as well Tuesday night with Jared Jones starting batting in the leadoff position. So Jay wasn't committing to doing that again tonight, but he said his gut feeling was he's going to stick with Jared Jones as the leadoff hitter and see where it takes us.
Yeah, Jones was not one, not two, but three homers on the day. So I would imagine – coaches, players, kind of superstitious. I'd be shocked if Jarrett Jones wasn't the leadoff hitter tonight as well.
Yeah. Yeah, he feels like, in a way, it just puts a lot of pressure on a pitcher from the beginning of the game, because obviously Jones is a home run threat. And, tying the LSU record for homers in a game with three against McNeese the other night, 14 home runs on the year, leads the Tigers in that category, leads LSU in RBI. So in a way, he feels like having Jones at the top of the lineup puts that pressure on a pitcher immediately. And it doesn't hurt that he has Tommy White hitting right behind him. So yeah, he's probably going to see some better pitches than he may see when he's further down in the lineup. So this will be an opportunity for Jarrett, and hopefully for the offense to continue what it started on Tuesday.
You've been around this program a long time. You saw the master of all motivators in Skip Bertman. Think this LSU team and this series is more between the ears than it is with a ball in your hand and a glove on your hand and a bat in your hand. How is Jay trying to, one, be stern with this club, yet still being able to pray? I mean, people need affirmation. They need to know they're good. How does he handle the motivation of this team when they're going through tough times?
You know, he laid it out earlier this week as far as, you know, where the team is. I mean, everyone knows LSU's not where we expected it to be. However, there's still a lot of opportunities ahead of it beginning this weekend. And he said his philosophy, the way he's termed it, is all we just have to worry about is what's next. What's next? Let's not think about what's happened in the past. Let's not think about what may happen 2 weeks from now. Let's look at what's right in front of us. What's next? And what's next is tonight against Tennessee, great ball club, on the road, very difficult place to play. Let's focus on the challenges that's going to present. And then once we get through that challenge, what's next? Let's move on to day two. So that's kind of the approach he can take. And he was really preaching that during the week this week. And at the same time, trying to give the boys, like you say, some positive affirmation that, look, the season's far from over. Now, maybe, right, you know, at this point, it's going to be tough for LSU to host a regional. But if we do travel for a regional, we know we're not playing an SEC team in a regional, and we can win the regional because we're not playing an SEC team, even if we're on the road. And if we make it to a super regional, we're very likely to play an SEC team in a super regional in a 2 out of 3 series, just like we're doing right now. And we've got one great pitcher in Luke Holman, who's proven he can beat the top SEC teams. So he's using examples along those lines to show that, like, we're not out of anything by any means, and these guys have the ability, and they have played better. Although the results weren't there in the Vanderbilt series, as close as LSU was to winning that series, Jay felt like they competed better, and they played at a higher level. And also, another thing he said this week, Jordy, is that he's going to, in a way, to use a football term, he's going to open up the playbook this week. You might see the Tigers run more, bunt more, hit and run more, try to create more things for the offense to put up some runs. So that'll be something to watch as well.
Well, for a pitching staff that we thought was going to be the strength of this club, now they're trying to find guys that can pitch. Unfortunately, they got to go up against Tennessee, who's number one in the conference in team batting average, .338 with 94 doubles, 3 triples, 89 home runs, tied with Georgia for first in the league in homers. And has Blake Burke been there forever? He's only batting .410.
Feels like it.
How long has he been there?
Like it feels like he's been there a long time. He's having an incredible year, along with this kid, Kavaris Tears, who was also on their team last year, but was a reserve last year. We saw him play as a pinch hitter in Omaha, and Jay said at the time he remembers thinking about Kavaris Tears as, man, this kid's going to be really something special, even though he was just a backup last year. And it's turned out he's right, as both Tears and Burke are hitting .410 on the year, and they're just having incredible years, along with several other guys. I mean, this kid Christian Moore, another kid, their shortstop, he feels like he's been there forever. He's a big time, you know, future major leaguer for sure. And they have a couple other guys. Dylan Dreiling is having a tremendous year as well. Just the lineup is just littered with all stars, great players. Tony Vitello, regarded as one of the top recruiters in the country, and it definitely shows. I mean, his roster is just filled with some of the top prospects in the country, and their offense certainly reflects that. Now, as fans may remember, Lindsey Nelson Stadium is very offensive-friendly. It's a small ballpark. Mm-hmm. In fact, Jay called it a homer dome today. So that's part of the reason why they score so much and so often, but you have to give credit to the caliber of players that they have. Now, the pitching staff perhaps isn't quite on the level of the pitching that Tennessee has had most recently under Vitallo, but it's still obviously very capable, and hopefully LSU can generate enough offense to fend off the offense that Tennessee will certainly generate as well.
If you ask LSU baseball fans who they loathe the most, I think the Tennessee coach is the guy. When did that all come about? What happened there between LSU and Tennessee? So, you're the historian. Why all this vitriol for him?
Yeah. You know, Jordy, I guess it started in the 2021 season. Paul Menary's last year as a head coach at LSU. And LSU, we came here to Knoxville. It was early in the 2021 season for a series. And at that point, Vitallo had been there a couple of years, but Tennessee really hadn't made a name for itself yet. But they were starting at that point to be really good. And we had three very emotional, tight games, and Tennessee won all three. You know, such an emotional series. And Vitallo, you know, I think he's toned it down a little bit since then, but he was just so animated. And all his players were so emotional. There was a lot of, trash talking going back and forth. And I think it kind of started there. But then, of course, LSU, as you remember, barely makes it to the NCAA tournament, gets sent to Eugene, Oregon, upsets Oregon and wins the regional. And, of course, who do we get to play in the super regional? Tennessee, again, in Knoxville. And there were a couple of things that were said. Coach Menary had made some comments after the regular season about the hostility of the Tennessee fans and insinuated that they were, using racial slurs and things of that nature toward LSU players. And that really upset the Tennessee fans. And Tony Vitallo didn't really do anything to calm those fans' concerns. And, and Coach Menary, it was his last weekend in Tennessee. To their credit, the Tennessee administration did an announcement about Coach Menary retiring at the end of the year, and congratulations, what a great career. And, of course, the fans roundly booed him during that announcement. So there's just a lot of things like that that kind of made it, a little
classy. Stay classy, Knoxville. Stay classy.
Yeah,
there we go.
But I will say, to Jay's credit, Jay appears to have a very professional relationship with Tony Vitallo. Tennessee came to Baton Rouge last year for a three-game series, which LSU won 2-3. No issues there. No issues in the two games the teams played in Omaha last year. So I think some of that hopefully has been laid to rest.
All right, Lindsey Nelson, what a great broadcast. Yeah. He did all the Notre Dame games back in the day on television. He was terrific. It's a home run ballpark. It's a nice little. It's like Cameron Indoor is to basketball. Not many seats, only 5,500, but they pack it in.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a tough place to play, man. I remember when we were here for that Super Regional in 21. Those people were fired up, and they really generate a lot of energy in that park, and I think their team really feeds off of it. And it's going to be a big time challenge for LSU, but we should be used to that by now after the teams and the venues that we faced so far this year.
Bill Franquez, thank you so much. Enjoy your stay. First pitch tonight, 6:30 pregame show at 6:00, LSU versus Tennessee. Let's see. LSU's 3-9 in league play. The Volunteers are 7-5, ranked number 4 in the country. LSU in one poll's ranked number 25. See if we can turn this thing and flip the script, Bill. Thank you as always.
Let's do it. Thanks, George.
All right, buddy. You're the best. Right, Bill Franquez live from Knoxville. We'll take a timeout here when we come back. Fridays with Faust next.
You're listening to ESPN 103.7 Lafayette and 104.1 Lake Charles, Southwest Louisiana's sports station and your home for the LSU Tigers.
And we are back. He is the one and only. We do it each and every Friday. George Faust. Fridays with Faust, sports director, KLFY. Hey, George, what's happening, buddy?
Not much, Jordy, not much. Just watching the Masters, trying to see if my my guys can come to the top. That's all.
All right. Well, let's update everyone here. Still, Bryson DeChambeau, Scottie Scheffler, 7 under par. Max Homa is at 6 under par, and everybody wants to know about Tiger. The last time I reported, he was at 2 over. He just made a birdie, so he's now at 1 over through 16 holes. He is even par today. So if he can stay like that, he's going to be fine. He's going to make the 24th straight cut at Augusta, I believe.
Yeah,
don't know all
like
that.
It's going to be around +3, yeah.
Yeah, so I think he's going to be in good shape if he can just finish out and these other guys don't go crazy the rest of the way. So maybe that wind will pick up. I want to see Tiger playing on the weekend. You know, I want to see that.
Yeah, exactly. If he's in it, you know, there's that little minute chance that he'll catch some magic, right?
Ooh,
and keeps you watching.
Wouldn't that be something if he was kind of in the hunt on a Sunday? Oh, my gosh, yeah. That'd be fantastic.
Fun.
Anyway, what's happening? The Cajuns had their 16-game winning streak come to an end thanks to Louisiana Tech, but that's okay. 16 straight's pretty darn good, man. Pretty darn good. And now they got to bounce back and continue doing their thing in Sun Belt Conference play.
Yeah, they have Marshall this weekend in a 3-game set. But look, you know, Coach Deggs talked about the fact that, you know, they know sometime that was going to come to an end. I mean, if it didn't, it'd be really historic and really amazing. But now he compared this team to the 2014 team in this regard, with regards to they never lost 2 in a row, the 2014 team, until they lost in the Super Regional to Ole Miss. So that was the last time in that season they lose one, they bounce right back and put up a W. So he, according to Coach Deggs, this is the same kind of makeup on this ball club that ball club had. And so I don't expect the losing streak, if you will, to start because of the way that they approach each game and the way that Coach Deggs kind of has set this mindset of this team. And I think they're going to be fine and they'll keep on maybe stacking up some more wins here. Now it's a chance to stay undefeated in conference or win those series in conference play. I think they've won 11 straight, I believe, in conference play. So that's the goal now, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. Get that, you know, there's strength of schedule and all that kind of stuff. They can only do what they can do. So they got to stockpile as many wins as they can. We haven't talked much football, but tomorrow will be the first live scrimmage of the spring season for Coach Deggs. I'm sorry, Coach Desimo and company. The spring game will be on Saturday, April 27th. What are you hearing from Cajun Field and this football team that Coach Dez is trying to put together?
Yeah, you know, I think there's a lot of youth, and there's a lot of question marks at many different positions. But Coach Desimo said, you know, look, there's some offensive line question marks that can be answered. They feel like they have some pieces in place that can answer those questions, but I think what it's going to boil down to really is it's going to be the depth of that offensive line on the offensive side of the ball anyway, because you're going to have experience. Chandler Fields seems to be taking real command of the offense and handling the business that needs to be done by a quarterback. So I think they're set in that regard because there is a lot of experience. Now you just need to make sure your quarterback's upright and you can run the ball with a solid offensive line. I think that's where his focus was this week, at least when we talked to him earlier this week. That was kind of the focus. And so they'll be watching that, I'm sure, along with a lot of other things that I think at the wide receiver position, I think there's going to be some pleasant surprises. I think a guy like Harvey Broussard is a guy who's going to probably step into his own here in the next in this coming season. I peg him right now as a way too early to watch type of list. He's on that list for me. I just think he's got some amazing speed. He's got the height. Maybe put on a little bit of weight, but that might slow him down just a tad. But still, he's a talent to watch, and watched him all through high school, and I think he's going to be a good wide receiver for the Cajuns.
Okay, George Faust, kind enough to join us. The softball team, they're kind of rolling. Tell me about this sophomore catcher, Victoria Valdez. She seems to be making quite an impact at an early age for this softball club.
Yeah, look, you know, I think the beauty of what Jerry Glasgow has been able to do is to identify talent early and put them on the field and give them the opportunity. I think that happened last year with Maya Davis, I believe is the one who was just an unbelievable stealing bases last year as a freshman. So to his credit, he sees something special in Victoria and her ability to control a pitching staff and put forth all the things that you want from a catcher in a game situation type thing. So I think that's what's really impressive about her is that she's been able to embrace that role and take it on and really push this team forward as they continue to vie for that title of Sunbelt champs and position themselves for the postseason.
They're at second place Texas State tonight for a Sunbelt series. Yeah. And like the men, they're undefeated in Sunbelt play. They're 12-0. So I think the growing pains that they went through, finding out who can and who can't. And like you said, Coach Glasgow recognizes talent, puts him in there, lets him play. I'm sure he still talks about that Oklahoma game and how that just made a seismic change in the attitude of this club, that where they said, you know what, we can beat them, and we can beat anybody.
And I think that was the mindset right after as well. Like, look, this is a great win, but look, let's go take it. See, this is what we are capable of. Now let's go take care of our business the rest of the way and play the way we know we can play. And that he can definitely point to that game and go, this is what we're capable of. That's what I expect, and let's go do it. And I think that's they've kind of responded to that kind of idea and bought in. And Not that they weren't bought in before, but I think that once you start seeing the results as a player, you kind of go, oh, Coach does know what he's talking about. All right, let's follow
him. That's right. All right, George, it's Friday. That means it's our food poll question of the week. And, of course, we include you at all times on this. So, James Mesh, fire away at this, at my dear friend here.
Yeah, George, so whenever it comes to your birthday dinner, what are you choosing to go get? Are you looking to get a steak? Are you looking for some crawfish? Maybe you're a sushi guy, or are you going with something else?
So you didn't. My favorite dish is lasagna. So we'll hit up. It'll be lasagna, and then my wife's peach cobbler is second. My dessert. Ooh. So those are the two. I love peach cobbler, and I love lasagna, but. I mean, of that list, like of the three you named, I would say a steak on that, but I'll go with lasagna as my favorite. So okay, I guess I click other.
Now, I'm not trying to get you in trouble, George, but you mentioned that your wife made the peach cobbler. You didn't mention your wife making the lasagna. So is this something from mom?
Oh, she does. No. She makes lasagna too. Yeah.
Good recovery. Good recovery.
Yeah, absolutely. Smart. Absolutely. My wife is a
smart man.
We're gonna throw that out there.
All right, George Faust, you're the best. Fridays with Faust, Sports Director KLFY. Enjoy the weekend. Go back to watch the Masters, buddy. Thank you.
All right, Jordy. Talk to you later.
All right, we'll take a timeout here. We'll come back. It's time for the three caballeros: George Becknell, James Mesh, and yours truly. I have no idea what we're gonna do. but we're going to do it anyway and have some fun with it. So stick around next.
Back to the sports talk you not only want, but need. This is ESPN, 1037 Lafayette and 1041 Lake Charles, Southwest Louisiana's sports station.
All right, welcome back, kiddos. It's time for the Three Amigos. James Mesh back in the EVCO Development Studios. And my main man, George Becknell, somewhere in the landscape of America. Good afternoon, George. How are you?
Jordy, I'm fantastic, my brother. How are you? Happy belated birthday, by the way.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Great. You know, James Mesh's birthday was yesterday, so we can wish him one. Yeah.
And mine was Sunday. Happy belated, James.
I'll tell you what, these Aries, we're pretty strong, man. We're pretty strong. Things are looking better for Tiger to make his 24th consecutive cut, which would be an all-time record at Augusta because Bryson DeChambeau and Scottie Scheffler just bogeyed, so they're at 6 under, and Tiger is still at 1 over, so he's well within the cut line at this point in time. Tiger is getting ready to play his 18th hole today, so tied with Gary Player and Freddie Couples for the most consecutive cuts made. Wouldn't you love to see Tiger maybe catch lightning in a bottle Saturday and then be in the hunt for Sunday? Wouldn't that be amazing?
Jordan, I don't think there's anything this weekend in sports that would make me happier. I would love to see Tiger catch lightning in a bottle because, to be honest, I expected him to be a lot further back than he actually is. So the fact that he's kind of in the hunt, being a little competitive, I would love to see Tiger make this thing interesting and take it down to the wire. You know, God forbid he wins. If he wins, I'd be so excited.
Oh, that'd be great. James, what is your perspective on Tiger Woods, golf? And you're young, but how old were you when this fervor started rolling with him?
Oh man, very, very young. I'm only a young 24 years old at this point now.
Yeah.
I think for me, it definitely would be awesome to see Tiger be able to make the cut once again. I just know it's been a really big struggle for him since he's had those injuries. However, he does take pride and a lot of pride in being able to make the cut and have that consistency and have that streak continue to go. I think if he's putting all his eggs into one basket one more time, I think it would be at this point in the Masters.
Nobody knows the course better. We will see what happens along those lines. Relatively large NBA game tonight, Becknell. Pelicans, Golden State Warriors, you know the scenario. Pels one game ahead of the Phoenix Suns. They're trying to maintain that sixth seed of the playoffs and avoid the play-in. Your thoughts? Golden State, man, they are like one of those teams that scares me. If they start knocking down threes, woo, look out. What do you think?
Yeah, Jordy, I think it's a dangerous game. But look, I watched the Pels last night. They played a game from the wire to the wire and had to leave the whole time. They do drive me crazy because they had like an 18-point lead and they let it go down.
23. 23.
And then they opened up again and then they let it go down. Yeah, they're stressful to watch. But if you think about it, they're playing without Brandon Ingram. They're playing some good basketball right now. The Warriors, to me, are not the Warriors of old. So, to me, Steph Curry has to go for like 35-40, which is possible for the Warriors to even have a shot. So, and if you look at what's on the line for the Pelicans, like you said, the Suns are a game behind them, but the Suns own the tiebreaker with the Pelicans. So, they have to finish with a better record than the Suns to avoid the play-in. And then you get Brandon Ingram back against the Lakers on Sunday. This is a must-win for the Pelicans. Yeah. I think they handle business because Draymond is a step slower. Klay Thompson is not Klay Thompson. And I like this young, up-and-coming, and fit Zion Williamson-led team. So give me the Pelicans to take care of business in San Francisco.
You can't let Draymond Green get in your head. You just got to ignore the dude.
Can't do it.
Just go play. James, let me ask you a question. Trey Murphy's really playing well. His outside shooting has been spectacular. They keep talking about Brandon Ingram coming back for Sunday's game. Heaven forbid, do you start Ingram or do you keep Trey Murphy in the lineup and keep this good mojo that they've had on the road, continue going that way, and let Ingram kind of slowly integrate himself back into the flow of things? What do they do with Ingram?
I think it really all depends on what happens tonight, because if you are able to take down the Warriors and the Suns lose once again, well, then it doesn't really matter whether you win or lose against right. the Lakers on Sunday. And then at right. that point, yeah, you can still keep Trey Murphy in. But if it's the case where you lose and then Phoenix wins and all of a sudden now Phoenix is back in the sixth seed and you're now sitting in the play-in tournament at the seventh seed, now I feel like you have to go with Brandon Ingram. That way you give yourself the best chance to win, because I know that the Lakers aren't the best team. However, they always play up to that to the Pelican squad.
They do. You can't ever count them out with LeBron and Anthony Davis in a big game. You just can't. And who's that guard they got, the left-hander?
D'Lo. D'Angelo Russell.
Yeah, D'Angelo Russell. I mean, you just never know. But with LeBron, that's what I'm saying. I mean, if those two teams make it out of the play-in and get into the playoffs, all bets are off.
Absolutely.
All bets are off. Agree?
Absolutely, 100%.
Jeez. All right, No, nobody's going to the spring football game, but what do you hope occurs for LSU Saturday with this new look Tiger team?
Well, Jordan, I need to see the defense look better than they looked last year. And look, all indications tell me that they should, right? Because you went out, you got some, you know, you got some OGs coming back to coach. You know, you invested more in the defense. You made the whole, all the changes you did. But last year, we wasted one of the best quarterback performances in college football history and didn't even make the playoff because the LSU defense was that bad. And that's something that we're not used to in Baton Rouge, right? So I need to see the defense dominate. I got confidence in Garrett Nussmeier that he's able to pass. I think the run game will be better. The offensive line is very good. So I'm not concerned about that. I don't care if Nussmeier throws four interceptions in the spring game. I need to see the defense step up and handle business and look like we can compete in the SEC. So I want to see the defense play well.
Okay. James, any opinions on that?
Yeah, I agree with George altogether, because I was initially going to say I want to see how Harold Perkins is going to be able to handle being in the inside linebacker role again. How does he command the defense? But really – and, of course, you just look at all three levels of the defense, because you had a lot of concerns with the cornerback position. You couldn't cover anyone. You had to play in basically cover four all game, and they're just going to dink and dunk you. And if you don't feel confident in your tackle ability, it's just going to lead to bigger plays as well. Plus, if you're not going to be able to even get a pass rush, whether it's with the interior defensive lineman or with the edge rushers, it's like you just need to see everyone play better on the defensive side. Of course, Garrett Nussmeier and the receivers, you are curious to see what they end up doing. But if I had to choose which side of the ball I would have a bigger eye on and what they look like in this spring game, I know it doesn't mean a lot, but seeing the signs of, is this an approved group? I would look more at the defense than the offense.
Well, we all know it's going to be vanilla. It's going to be very, very simplified, downscaled, all those kind of things. I don't want to see any of it, to be honest with you, because it's not going to matter. It's just not going to matter. Let's just get to the fall. Let's go through training camp. Let's get the full roster out there. Go pick up a couple of defensive linemen out of the portal. Get your freshmen all in there. And let's go to work and get ready for what is a very interesting schedule, to say the very, very least. And can LSU please win a season opener? I'm so glad we don't play Florida State anymore. I know you got to go play USC in Vegas, but boy, you know, they don't have their quarterback from a year ago. We don't have our quarterback for a year ago. Yeah. That's going to be another tough one, right? Mm-hmm. It's going to be another tough one, and that'll set the tone for the whole year.
Yeah, absolutely. It's going to set the tone for the whole year, and it's going to be a big nationally televised game against a quality opponent. But look, if you can't stop a nosebleed, you're probably not going to beat them. So, the defense has to step up.
It can't be any worse. It's impossible.
Yeah.
It is impossible.
It is impossible to be worse.
But here's the problem. And James, the problem is the defense can't be any worse. The offense can't nearly be as good. Can't be as good. You can't lose those many players and make up that production. You just can't.
I will say this. Optimistically, I believe the run game with the actual running backs is going to be a lot better. And that's going to tilt the time of possession. That's going to make Garrett Nussmeier's life easier. And it's going to keep the defense off the field. So I think that part of the offense can be better, right? So I'm a little optimistic about that.
All right. Okay. James, the Cajun 16-game winning streak came to an end. Now they've got who? Marshall. Still a really good baseball. 16 straight wins is amazing.
Absolutely. And even with this loss, it was still good for the RPI because Louisiana Tech, they got some games coming up as well that could help make it look like a good loss as you get farther along into the season. With this matchup against Marshall over the weekend, you feel really good because Marshall isn't doing too hot. They are going to be changing up a little bit. They're going to have their ace on Saturday. So it really comes down to you really need to make sure that you win tonight's game and at least get Sunday's, because if you're going to lose one of these three games and at least get two out of three, because sweeping in the Sun Belt isn't the biggest necessity, as long as you can get two out of three, you would look for it to be Friday and Sunday, since the ace for the Thundering Herd is on Saturday.
George, I just find this so hard to fathom and believe. Shohei Ohtani's former interpreter is accused of stealing more than $16 million from the Dodgers star, faces up to 30 years in prison. Mizuhara is alleged to have made 19,000 wagers, nearly 25 bets per day between December 21, January 24. Does Shohei Ohtani ever look at his checking account? I mean, how do you do that?
I think this interpreter is the fall guy. You know, I saw a clip.
I smell a rat. I smell a rat.
He's the fall guy. There's no way Ohtani didn't know that. And you know, the quote, the great Pete Rose, he said, "I wish I had an interpreter when I played baseball. He'd be in the Hall of Fame." You know, like, there's no way Ohtani is not making these bets. The interpreter had to go to jail. He had to get in trouble to save Ohtani's career. I get it. But there's no way he didn't notice that. I don't care, you know, how much he trusts this guy. He knew that.
James, do you smell a rat here? I mean, this thing changed like, boom, in the blink of an eye from one thing to a whole nother thing. What do you think?
Yeah, with this story, the fact that they kept changing it over and over again multiple times, even in the same day when the news first dropped, when they changed the story up of what it was happening, it's just like you almost can't believe anything that happens. And even though you don't want to have to default to this, it's like it feels like it's always just going to be the athlete, because that's just generally how it goes. How often do you just mistakenly be like, wait, I lost $4.5 million. What happened? Like, how does that happen?
I think George hit the nail on the head. I think this Mizuhara is the fall guy, and I think baseball says we got to have Ohtani. He's our biggest star. See you later, big dude. The average amount of the bets was $12,800. That's crazy. That's crazy. James, have you ever heard of a guy, and I talked about this earlier, Hunter Brown of the Astros? He picks two-thirds of an inning to start the game. George gave up 11 hits, 9 runs, 1 walk, no strikeout, 40 pitches, gave up 11 hits, and they kept him in. First inning.
Yeah, I've never seen that before. It was probably the worst pitching performance you've ever seen from a pitcher, especially from the major league sense. Like, usually if you're going to have a bad inning, it ends up happening later as you get farther into the game. But the fact that it was the opening inning, it was just rough to see.
Dude, that's like Babe Ruth baseball statistics, like the little 11, 12-year-olds pitching 40 pitches and giving up 9 runs. That's unreal. A professional athlete doing that? And the coach left him in there. I don't know. There's no way.
Just kind of embarrass him a little bit, make him work a little bit harder the next time, I guess. George, thank you. We're out of time. Well done. Enjoy the weekend, my friend. Have fun, James. Thank you. We're back to wrap it all up after this.
Let your voice be heard. Give us a call on the Mike's Marine Hotline at 337-706-0111. Brought to you by Mike's Marine, keeping you on the water. So speak your mind and call the hotline, 337-706-0111. This is ESPN, 1037 Lafayette and 1041 Lake Charles, Southwest Louisiana's sports station.
Back to wrap things up, Joe Burrow says, yeah, I'm pro-taunting. If a player gets flagged for taunting, it's currently a 15-yard penalty, but old Joe doesn't seem to think it should be penalized at all. He said, you know what? We're all grown adults that work really hard at what we do, and sometimes we'd like to show it. I'm not going to get my feelings hurt if somebody sacks me and taunts me like you made a play. I get it. Like, good for you. Joe, I love you, baby. I love you. Way to go, baby. That's what I'm talking about. Let them talk. Let them celebrate. Let them do what they want to do. Bryson DeChambeau, 7-under, a one-stroke lead over Max Homa and Scottie Scheffler right here, right now. Let me get a quick update on El Tigre. Last time I reported, he was at plus one. He is at plus one right now, playing his final hole of the day. He's tied for 28, so Tiger's going to make the final cut. James Mesh, final results of the poll, please.
54% are going with steak as their choice to eat for their birthday dinner. 19% have said crawfish. 13% went with sushi. And the last 13% went with other. Plenty of other options out there, of course.
There's a ton of them. Again, happy belated birthday, James Mesh. I hope you celebrate it in fashion. Hope you celebrate it some more this weekend. And thanks for the great job that you do for us, for me, each and every day. I really do appreciate it. April 12th, busy day. Since it's the Masters, we go back to 1987. Poor Greg Norman in a playoff. Larry Mize chipped in from 140 feet for a birdie on the second playoff hole to win the Masters. It was Larry Mize's only major title. So close yet so far away, it was Greg Norman's second of three runner-up finishes at the Masters. He was second in 86, second in 87, and second in 1996. Of course, Norman, Live Golf, all there. Thanks to Christian Clark, Larry Holder, Bill Frankes, George Faust, George McNell, James Mesh, and you for listening in, and you, our partners that make it possible each and every day. Have a great weekend, everybody. Until next time, I'm Jordy Helfrich. Stay thirsty, my friends. Do everything you can to stay healthy. Be kind to one another. It's a gorgeous day. Be happy. So long, everybody.